too far going here. I don't know everybody, so I'd probably give you an introduction.
Paul Morris, is that right?
Yeah. I've seen you.
So what we're going to do, I guess, is talk about adult fish collection, adult fish collection issues. That's pretty wide open right now, but I think Rob and Tom and others can probably define what that agenda is a little more clearly here. And first, I would like to kind of see who everybody is. So, I'm Rock Peters with Northwest Division Corps of Engineers.
Richard Graves with Hypervision Corps. Yes.
Doug Hash, Griffin.
Jeff Fryer with Griffin.
Dennis Schwartz, Corps, Passage Team.
Gary Fredrickson, Fisheries.
Ed Meyer, out of Fisheries.
Dave Rush, support from District.
Ben Hausman, Project Bio, Carolina.
John Rarisich, Project Bio.
Tammy Mackey, Portland District Fisheries.
Tom Morris, Griffith.
Mike Langley, Portland District.
Bernard Clash, Portland District.
John Winter, Griffith. Ron Loker, Griffith. Currently the Executive Director of Walmart. Griffith is undergoing a search for a new Executive Director.
I didn't know about this new title, and I do think we should start a campaign to promote Rob to this position permanently.
Rob just wants money to remain on this.
I can't believe that. So, I'm not probably the right one to start this out. I guess what I'd like to do, and please help me here, I'd like to understand this issue that several have been raised. I know there's been a lot of discussion about the adult fish collection facility, potential upgrades. I know that the biopsy is a conservation recommendation for upgrades, although not specified. But I frankly have not been very close to this. So I would like to better understand what the issues are, whether it be, you know, impacts to passage, whether it's more related to how we're operating the facility and what the intent, long-term intent is on this facility. So we all have a common understanding of that. And then I feel like with that, maybe we can attack this issue and better understand that direction forward.
So
go ahead.
So I'll take some of the blame for asking for this meeting. When John and Doug came to me and said, you know, we've got some problems using the AFF the way we need to get our sample sizes. I talked to Tom a little bit, and I said, well, why don't we try and get a meeting together and see what we can do to work this out. I think all of them thought that was a good idea. From a Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission standpoint, we use the AFF for a variety of purposes related to implementing commitments in the Pacific Salmon Treaty process, which are commitments between the United States and Canada. And in that process, the two countries have just, the negotiators have initialed a new 10-year agreement that's back at the State Department and its equivalent in Ottawa for review and approval. But there are certain sort of sampling procedures associated with treaty implementation there that are important for the country's obligations. We also use the sampling facility to assist with our USDA Oregon in-river fisheries management responsibilities. So, as folks may or may not know, Judge King just signed the USDA Oregon management plan yesterday. It's a new 10-year commitment that involves all of the fishery managers, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, Fish and Wildlife Service, NOAA, our signatories, Department of Justice as a signatory. And we do things like try to estimate the run size composition, steelhead composition. Jeff and John, these guys know a whole lot more about that than I do, but our ability to sample at the AFF is important for fulfilling our fisheries management obligations. And then we have a new suite of needs coming down the pipe related to what some people call the MLA or the Fish Accords, but it's CRITVIC. Vet, Warm Springs, Yakima, Umatilla, Core, Deep Bay, Reclamation, all signed this 10-year commitment. It includes a lot of EPA projects, but and a variety of other things. And kind of this new, you know, one of the things that we've been spending a lot of time with EPA on implementation, trying to instill a new spirit of cooperation. But I think that new spirit of cooperation is something that the Corps pledged to. And in any event, probably in a more detailed sense, what we have is in that a whole, we have about 200 and some projects that EPA has committed to fund and implement. And a handful of those, that's among the three presidents, a handful of those involve us doing additional sampling at the AFF, some good table and some other stuff. And again, Jeff and John, these guys can address the details on that. So we have AFF-related needs that go out into the foreseeable future. We need to have a way to use this facility in a fashion that, you know, permanent responsibilities with NOAA. We don't own the facility, it's a Corps of Engineers facility. We're going to be there. We're all going to be here for the foreseeable future in terms of our institutions. We just need to figure out a way to be able to continue to use the AFF in a way that works for our sampling needs and our commitments under various larger kind of obligations. So, anyhow, I want to, that's a little bit of backdrop on our interest in me. I understand there's a lot of history on this, including Rock having some personal history with respect to this facility. But, you know, I think we can kind of all lay out our needs and maybe we can come up with a short-term and a long-term plan for how we at least work through our AFS, the AFS stuff here.
There's a little more than needs, there's concerns too. I think that's what we've voiced several times, that we have the presence of the AFF isn't necessarily a blank check for using it. Yeah. I have concerns about the facility and the way it handles fish, the way Fisher handled through it. I don't think it was ever designed to handle the number of fish that we're talking about first. So some renovations would be in order, I think, for the level of use that we're seeing. There's also issues associated with the temperature of water, the need to handle and trap fish during probably the time of year when we would least like to handle and trap fish. So now there's a bevy of concerns that both the Corps and the fisheries and other managers have over the use of the facility. Especially when we're talking about trapping large numbers of fish under warm water conditions. So we need to come up with some way to meet, you know, the needs as well as the needs of the fish to migrate through the facility and through the bay. So, you know, one thing is color of money and whether there's money available to the renovations, what are those renovations, what do they look like? What percentage of fish do we need to be passing into hands, handling? What's the justification for that? Are there other ways of doing that? You know, to reduce the amount of tape associated with that facility. And I'm not pointing fingers at the guys over there. They're doing a good job, I think. And I've watched the process many, many times over the years. But it doesn't take too many times to watch a fish slide 30 feet on their sides, flopping and beating themselves against the sides of the fluids, to make you a little concerned about what we're doing to the fish. And if you're running the entire Washington Shore ladder, at least downstream of the UNT, up through there, that's a lot of fish. My Bonneville Dam being the first dam this fish encountered. It's not the best way to start them on their journey up the river. So, I mean, there's needs and there's concerns. I guess that's my main point. We need to get those out. And it just isn't a blank check. It just isn't. We can just use it as much as we want.
Yeah, Gary, I wasn't trying to differentiate, draw a line between needs and concerns.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure that we get all the, we need to have all those needs out there, you know, the numbers of fish that are needed. And that's one thing that we've talked about as far as the size of fish, looking at air relief on splits. That may be, we may be able to accomplish that by catching a fish. That we can do it through the video, you know, video counting through the cabin or something like that. There's possibilities.
I just add, I think, and we, within NIMS, are suffering a little bit. We've had some discussion with Peter Dyer and some of those folks to try to figure out exactly what the needs are. And I think there's a lot of confusion on, you know, what that is, what those possibilities are, which is going to bring our ability to try to figure out how we can, you know, meet those needs in the way that's, you know, least injurious to fish, potentially. And then this is what I've got from past meetings, and Peter was able to clarify some of those points for us on the phone, but it's probably not clear to this entire group exactly what those things are.
So, it seems like we have...
Sorry, one other thing that's missing here are the states. Well, we're involved in that too. I don't know if you guys are to speak for the state needs, or if it's just... We just need to make sure that those are included as well somehow. Washington's been using the facility, Oregon's been using the facility. I think most of that's still harvest management. Maybe it's in cooperation with you guys, and it's all the same deal. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
that,
in the past, it was the state's responsibility to sample the steel, and that, that transferred over to us, which goes back to, you know, we were in the facility, you know, at the time sampling fish, and so, you know, it's just a lot easier and cheaper to go through and sample, you know, all the fish than it is to, you know, have
one guy do this.
One guy switching back and forth, and they're paying for additional employees and distributing ourselves.
Did it include winter steel?
That is still under, I think, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. So, Rob was talking about, you know, with the moving away projects, so I mean, it's additional work, but it's still, it's basically adding to our existing sampling. The number of fish we sample is still the same. We're just adding a pit tank. Adding a pit tank, genetic sample, that's all. That's just not additional sampling. It's the same number of fish as we usually sample, but it's just adding.
Well, I don't think anybody's questioning the need for the data. I mean, I think that's, you know, there is a need for this information for various purposes. And the question is, how do we get it without unduly impacting fish and passing through the data?
So, Mike, I don't know if you were Dave. I think we also have additional needs from CORE, what I said, the action agency requirements. Can you give us just a thumbnail? I'm not sure I could reiterate that, so based on that.
Yeah, you did that.
So look, before you do, here's my thinking. I guess you guys probably all really know well what your needs are. But I think getting a clear understanding of my, or several of us, in our heads, for the different stocks, time of year, that's going to help me. I hope I'm not wasting somebody's time by now, but I certainly don't know it. Not that I really need to know the detail, but I'd like to be able to document this clearly. If we can't get there today, I'd like to think of this in the future requirements as well. And there's no way to plan unless we know what that future potential is. And I guess there's three elements that I've just heard. There's the states, there's the tribal, under three different potential programs that Rob outlined, the Pacific Standard Treaty, University of Oregon, and the CORE's, which I was not aware of the CORE's additional requirement, and I'd like to hear more about that. And then I think there's unique times. What I heard the second venue then is the issues, concerns regarding maybe different times of the year in sampling, and I'd like to try to start matching those up. I mean, to me, that'd be a huge first step. That may not provide us all the answers today, but does that sound about right based on the first 5 minutes of our group? If we can get that on paper and have some discussion on that, then I think looking to the future is the next step.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's true that our sample size for Oregon, I've found to be all of the samples for our projects.
That you say for now?
That what we're looking for. And it's kind of different projects require a change. our stock identification projects for Chinook, or age composition projects for Chinook, Steelhead, and sockeye, or Chinook and sockeye, require, our goal is 90% probability of being at plus or minus 5 percentage points, which is kind of a loose goal, but in terms of, it's a big difference in terms of your estimate for next year as to whether you have 5% jacks or 10% jacks. It's going to make a big difference in terms of how many fish you predict next year. But based on that, I've done some simulations, it's 6,700, roughly in that area per stock, so spring, summer, fall, close to proportionally distributed to the weekly run counts, the weekly run abundance, is roughly what we need there. For fall Chinook, we've got a new project with salmon commission to try to better estimate fall Chinook in some particular areas like the chutes, and that one requires us to put out about 1,300-1,400 hit tags for fall Chinook. Again, proportionally distributed to the run, the best we can. Steelhead, that's more of a tack thing, and they want 1%, always been their goal of the run. So. And then we've also got Genesis, the numbers ones in the bottom are Genesis numbers, and Genesis always wants, they want to differentiate into all different stocks. You need a big sample size to do that, so you know, the Genesis one is pretty much whatever they can get, so. Which is what those estimates are based on. It's kind of what we could get if we went out 4 to 5 days per week and did 60, could do 60 to 100 fish with a week.
And so and the 4 to 5 days a week, and we've been doing half day shifts and whole day shifts, is that right?
Yeah, we're at the higher temperature, so it's from so, and part of the sample size problem, which makes it really difficult for us to try and estimate how many fish we're going to eat, and we've been through this lots of times, we can have an estimate of the number of fish coming back, in the last several years in a row, those estimates have been very, very different than the actual number of fish. And so, from a week-to-week basis, we want to start sampling on April, the week, the first week of April, we have an estimate of if we want to, sample 50 or 100 fish this week, but, run 3 weeks late, so we can't really put a hard line estimate on number of fish we need per week. What we've done in the past was just go out and sample for a standard 6-hour period and sample as many fish as possible, and usually have people as possible fish going over, in a day. We're going to sample 100 plus fish in that 6-hour period. 500 fish going over, we're going to sample 10. And so you always, in the past, you have a criteria of the amount of time we can actually go out and sample. And depending on how many fish are coming through, sets our sample size. And in the past, it's ended up being, roughly 1% of the run. And we can size is where we end up. So.
Was that the two times a week for 6 hours each, or was that 4 times a week for 6 hours each?
So where we made the change is when we did the genetic studies. We used to come out two to three times a week, and we would sample during those times. When we're just doing the age stock composition. In those times, we come out and sample several hundred fish in a day. And then now what we've done is we've taken basically the same weekly sample size and spread it out over 5 days. That's roughly the same sample size as what we had before. So now, instead of going out and sampling 150 Chinook in 1 day, we come out and sample 40 Chinook a day for 5 days. So, and part of that was just to spread out the stock composition.
So you're adding days and reducing duration of these stocks.
Thought about sampling 2 minutes before we get a fish.
Yeah. It's not what you asked.
We have a good person. Actually, yeah, that's another one. It's a white project. So it's casing and duration of the
project. But we'll see. Yeah. So So this does help, I think, better understanding and what this doesn't tell me is maybe the next step, and that is, so what are the time frames sequenced for this? I mean, I probably can figure some of those out. But then also the timing duration to at the facility to accomplish that. And I just heard your example, which makes a lot of sense, is that's hard to predict at certain times of the year.
One of the things that tend to always use this project when you do have a hard number, like you've got 1,100 pit tags to put out for fall, I think a 10-year average and try to estimate weekly what you need in that 10-year average versus like in the rush when you're real early or real late, but you've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And if this year we actually, in terms of the full duplex tags, we got a lot more than we could put out, but because we were way under the rest of the year. The half duplex, but we only got 300. So I set up the 300 and did what the run's been, what the run size has been for the 10 years, and estimated this year, this week, that we needed 8 half duplex, and if you multiply that by 4 to get full duplex, we would need 8 times 4, so 32 fish total out of Bonneville for the propulsion of sampling to do that one particular project. Genesis, there was a lot more. I tend to work sort of each count and the pit tag in projects myself. And this week, I think in 4 days of sampling, 4 hours a day, we got 8 or 9 Wall Chinook was always sampled. We sampled about 20 steelhead and 16 hours of sampling times 3 tanks. Which is last year when we were operating one day a week, 4 hours per day with 4 big beats, and we were getting 40 to 70 fish throughout the times we were up in the stations. So this is we've got half that many in 4 days.
So this is not the right timing for this, but the picket lead, I don't know that anybody thinks the picket lead configuration is an optimum configuration, at least in the brief informal discussions I've had with several folks. And, you know, Steph points out that, everybody sort of knows the fish are pretty, I'm just out of school here.
The majority of the flow goes through Washington, the majority of the flow, but you have 2 open leads at 4, that's a huge wide open space. These fish are moving out through the system. You've got this little hole off to one side that goes to the AFF, and you've got this huge hole going on up the ladder with nice flow coming through it. Which way are you going to go? I'm not going that dark hole. I'm going on enough, but I've already been moving out through for the last umpteen number of years. So. Most of your fish, and I talked to the fishers over there this afternoon, this morning, and they said they were getting like 2 or 3 chinook a day and steelhead a day, and now they need 5 times that. And if there's 3,000 passing project, and they're getting 2 or 3 in a day. So the majority of the fish are going past. I think we have a solution for that. And I've got a plan that I worked on that I think would probably increase substantially the number of fish going into the AFF while allowing fish that are part of the number just don't want to go through their way out. So I think, and it's simple and easily implementable, it involves a couple more leads that we would put in and out that are parallel to the flow. They'd actually act to trap fish going into the AFF and more or less force them in there unless they fall back. If they fall back, they have the choice of going up to the other side and avoiding the AFF, but at least it gives fish a choice. It doesn't force the entire run to make a left turn into the ladder and have to go through that ladder for however many hours we're using it. So that I think we can deal with. I'm more concerned about actually handling those fish, at these temperatures that we have out there, because we even have exceeded 70. That's why we're in those criteria. I don't know if there's anybody here who thinks that 70 degrees is a good temperature for sample, but I doubt it. I think everybody's concerned with that. So, what I would like, I don't know if this is the time either, Rob, for this, but I'll be my concern is that, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to need to do it, we have to, there's all kinds of reasons for it, but do we have a plan to get away from intensive handling of this fish in the future? Do we have a way forward that would reduce the amount of handling through use of additional pit tag fish or pit tag in the upper basin? They come back and we don't really know who they are. We don't need to sample them. We don't need to touch them. We know everything we need to know from those fish. So, you know, index reaches of fish can do harvest management. Is there other reaches of fish that are ESUs or groups of fish or stocks or hatchery index stocks or whatever that we can use in lieu of actual trapping of fish at the facility every year like this? I would like to see a way out. No problem with fixing what we have now, we'll do that, but that still doesn't take away the intensive handling. And can we get beyond the intensive handling to something less, something more infrequent, something that doesn't require, by gosh, we've got to get in there, yeah, it's 71 or whatever degrees out there, but we've still got to handle all these fish. That's what concerns me, because I understand the hole in the data is a big hole. I don't know how you fill that. You just can't fill it with zeros. You have no data, and you can't get past that. So how do you get those data and still safeguard those fish? That's my goal. I don't know how to get there. I don't understand fully what you guys, the region needs in terms of information to achieve the goals that have been set forth. Right now, I know what we're doing. I know what Jeff's laid out. But are there other ways to get that information through proactive pit tagging? Video counts in terms of length, frequency, things like that, that can get us away from actually having to handle the fish. And actually having to spend millions of dollars on a refit.
So let me I think we may have made some progress on an issue. Let's see if we can
capture that.
But I think, without trying to get away from your question here,
okay.
If we can do something parallel to the flow with the pickup lead, particularly it's in the latter of the river, to me that sounded like that deals with the spring Chinook issue, the summer Chinook issue, the sockeye issues. I'm just asking that.
That's a question.
And then, so we've still got the temperature issue, which is an August-September issue to deal with. And so in terms of the pigotheques parallel to the flow kind of thing, these guys were mentioning it on our write-up too. How easily achievable is that? Is that a next year fix or a 3 year fix or? I just have no clue.
It's probably not. Well, I shouldn't be speaking, I guess, but it's not a 3 year fix. It's a next year fix. If that works. Maybe Ben could run out there and stick this thing in this afternoon. I don't know. It's possible.
5 o'clock fix.
That's right. It is a pretty quick fix.
It's quick, and it's just, it's picking leads, really, except they're this way instead of this way. And it'd be a matter of some angle iron and some various. See, the thing about this is it doesn't have a lot of force on it, so flow is actually going parallel, so we're not straightening flow. You wouldn't have to worry about a lot of debris,
I don't think. Maybe a little bit of side load there.
Yeah, because of how much. So it shouldn't be, it wouldn't have to be an alpha style type of structure.
So,
being an old farmer, I could probably go out there and stick a few post holes in and some.
You stay the hell out of our land.
It's the barbed wire, that'd be the problem.
Barbed wire? I can't help it.
Thank you, Rock.
Are those going to be permanent?
Pick it up right
now. Are you just going to keep those in?
I would say.
Be on a white.
The worst time is this time of the year where we have the highest number of fish passing and the highest temperatures in the water. So that's when we don't want to fish up. So it's really a couple of months.
We should probably talk about part of that, because I could see at least one panel of that vertical being removable.
I was thinking actually of all of them being on the
Which is they need the voice to be able to.
Yeah.
The guys out there.
Access ways.
Talked with the tribal guys out there this morning, and they said, yeah, they'd like to be able to raise a large caliber.
And then if you have debris problems, that's why you can raise more.
And they can put more in or less. I mean, you don't have to. You can either go all the way back to the next weir, or you could have a couple of them open if you need enough fish.
So, Ben, Mike, are you guys aware of this design?
We've just been seeing and talking about it in today and other days. It's just kind of, it's nothing official, nothing being all paper,
just kind of thinking about it. Yeah.
But it's pretty simple and doable. It's just, we have to look at the details and what it would take.
Hot wire, steel post.
Well, because access to it.
You
have always on it.
Lift
it
over.
Lift it. You know, all of
you have to take the ladder down, obviously, so that's the thing we would want to do right now.
Do the winter maintenance.
Yeah, winter maintenance. This would be a pretty simple thing, I think.
Right.
If the ladder's coming down this winter.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, except when I hear walkways and there's a whole other.
Yeah, that's.
Safety and design and all that kind of stuff that goes on. I know it's not so simple, but this is pretty simple.
So it sounds like this is something that could work with. Portland folks to try to at least understand this and see if that looks like it'd be workable. I know we have other issues in the library we need to accommodate for us. So that, yeah, that's a step that you could work with our folks.
Yeah.
No rainy design.
Who?
That would have to work.
That's what I said.
Your contract.
So I'm not guaranteeing funding for this, but you know, what I'm saying right now is this would be, I'm assuming this would be optional if we chose to make this change, but we'd certainly be willing to take a look at it. And so I'll be sure I understand what Rob suggested. That was, this would accommodate most of the issues in the first place of the aggregate stuff.
Spring and early summer.
This would resolve most of your notice issues on even the handling component for that time of year. Okay,
sufficient numbers of fish to the facility without having to close off the entire.
Yeah, got it.
Okay. It still becomes an issue when on those days you have
30,000 fish in the lab.
More than
because then we're diverting 15,000 of the law, potentially 15,000 of the law because of AFM.
It's again whether you want to make this flexible to reduce it.
It does. I think it does. My little drawing here has three panels in it. I think we had maybe four. The fishery suggested those. If there's 15,000 fish, they shouldn't have any problem getting their sample.
Yeah, so I mean, here's the issue. If we have 30,000 fish on over a day, and maybe half of Washington Shore is 15,000, that's still a 24-hour period. And with those kinds of numbers, we don't have to be out there very long. So we're talking 5 hours. So we're not talking about exactly 10,000. We might run if 1,000 are in there, sample, and we're done. The whole group does not go through.
But the problem is, when you charge AFF, you come in and you start in the morning, you charge AFF with fish, and you're only in there for a couple hours, and the freaking thing is full of fish now.
It's about a half hour pass.
Everything has to back out.
It takes about a half hour of fishing into the system and up to the false meters.
Well, it's closer to an hour. That's where we get our first fish. From the time we drop all the way all the way across, it takes about an hour for the fish.
So when you're in that holding pool and you're done, what happens to the facility?
And then basically during the system,
Go back to the ladder.
The fish can go on that ladder or the side of that. Yeah, that ladder. They can use that to go on out and out. So,
okay.
You pull the bolt in. And they just go on out. So it would be limited use, but still a lot of fish. I think we can get around this issue. We can get better samples, we can get around the pick and lead issue with this idea. I still can't get past the downsides of the trap itself, handling the
the awkwardness that is associated with the spatial arrangement of the trap facilities itself, and the anesthetic tank and the wake-up tanks, the grill, and the spoons, those 30-some feet from the spaceship, move through to the tank. So I'm asking folks, University of Idaho as well, to come up with ideas, you know, just ideas that may help improve the facility as it is, or bigger ideas that have to do with actually rearranging what's in the building itself. But that's a bigger issue, longer term, obviously.
So let's dig into that one a little bit. We did have more to the table. What does that been a big problem based on our current sampling needs? The fish handling, I thought we made improvements 2 or 3 times.
We made some improvements, but those were, we instead of letting the fish come on across and actually we could hit the back side of the wall or splash it on the channel, we put some flumes in there too. That's a great thing either. If you stand there and watch them for a while, that can't be a good ride for those fish. They beat the crap out of themselves going down the flume, and then they pop into the channel once they're another. And we have to do that because we are sorting by, eyesight. We're watching those fish go down, and we're saying, is that a Thule, is that a River Bride, or is that a Steelhead, or is that a Chinook? And then pushing a button and hitting a gate that flops them into another channel, and they continue to slide on down that channel to the tank, or back to the river.
If you look at the straightforward, they probably are, but if you look at straightforward injuries and time delay and all that, it's not huge. There's the unknowables of some of that.
There's a time delay, but it's
a time delay. Stuff Idaho came up with, it was, a couple hours to, and this is only from the bottom pit breeders in the lower ladder to the ones in the upper. The delay was from like a couple hours to like about 4 hours for Steelhead for the one today. And that's the delay part. Injuries, they don't really see much from it because.
Well, we had to carry that all the way to the spawning grounds. Right. They actually got the ultimate stress and temperatures and all the other fish. I just don't know what that is, and I don't think anybody here does. Nope. I do know we've had dead fish. I mean, fish die in the facility, and it's going to happen. But whenever you guys clean the thing out, those grizzlies at the other end of that thing have gray matter on them. How many fish died, we don't know.
Well, the distance from where they've now been, the resuscitated fish, they've got to go, and they got to go quick,
or they're not going to get hit.
And that's
hit.
Before we had that volitional egress to the
morning. Yeah. Yeah, the grill works, but even that's had some problems, and guys are reluctant to use it, so we end up using a little wake-up tank, which is just a little tank, and fish thrash in there, and guys are busy, so, it's kind of almost becomes a volitional accident for fish on that, and that's not the best thing to have fish in either, so there's close contact, potentially some disease transmission issues, it's just all the stuff associated with handling it. We probably have to do some of it, but do we have to do as much as we do? That's my question. Is there a better way of doing it, which would help accommodate greater volume of use, or can we cut back the volume of use such that what we have out there is sufficient? I don't know, but what I really don't want to walk away from this we'll try to fix it, but we have the needs without having some commitment to look at reducing those needs in the future. I mean, that's what I want to say.
And in truth, that's something we should all be trying to do now. At all threats.
But there's no commitment. There's never, as long as it's okay to do it, it's easier just to do it.
Right.
So to try to address the needs, I think you would have to do a massive increase in handling the juveniles. The tag goes. The problem, one problem with using existing tags, it's not a very representative group of fish. It tends to be heavily weighted towards hatcheries, snake river fish, not really wild fish, virtually no sockeye.
Yeah.
It's very spring, very spring chinook and steelhead probably oriented. So you've got that issue. The issue we have with sampling at Bonneville, though, is that the high temperatures where a lot of these fish return. We've got something like 70-80% of steelhead consistently come by when we're under these temperature restrictions.
That's
right. And then the fall chinook is close to 50%. Of course, I think part of that is the unbalanced. For the fall chinook, one of the problems is that we can't seem to get back in until it's 69.5 on the down temperature. Of course, chinook, when they in salmon, when the temperature starts to go down, they start moving. So it's that, yes, it would make more sense to have 70 on the upstream end because they're going into warming water, and then maybe 70.5 on the downstream, rather than 69.5 when the temperature is going. So that's a problem too. We missed half of our fall chinook there. So, but unfortunately, the high temperatures are it's when the fish is a lot of fish moving.
Yeah, well, that's not the fault of the fish or the temperature. It's what it is, and really, it's our needs that are the fault here. Can we address those needs in a way that gets away from that kind of problem?
I think, and we've talked about this in the past with the video and trying to do it about length. I think there is some potential there, although on the other hand, I also think that this whole idea of 78 centimeter A and B really needs to be looked at. And really the way to look at that is either A, a whole bunch more fish tagging a juvenile steelhead, or B, what we're doing, which is sampling the fish, putting fish tags in, taking genetics from them, and seeing where they go, and determine whether they really are an A or B run, depending on where they go.
I was just reading some information the other day about how the value of an adult salmon versus the value of a juvenile salmon, and on how some of these very people are also saying the same thing about these adults are not a problem. And we really are working with what we're getting back, and I guess this is the currency of the river. I think we have to be really careful with adults. That's the return.
We've reduced the needs for the corb tagging a lot over the years. We've been doing the system-wide things now to do real specific evaluations, often trying to do it as much as spring or summer fish as possible. And part of that was all with the idea of interacting with the region to reduce impacts on passage for the number you're sampling and all that. And this temperature criteria and all that's developed as a part of that. And the idea of reducing how much we impact runs, and that's where all this, and we, and our researchers have complained to some extent too, but we've learned to live with the reduced impact and trying to get quality information, and that's where we're looking at other ways to get that and still reduce the impact.
There's certainly some issues with tagging juveniles.
Yep.
I mean, that's the thing. We've got some concerns about the effects of pit tags on survival, adult survival of juveniles that has to be resolved. But if we can't resolve that, or if that is not something we think it is, then tagging more juveniles for other purposes gives us a lot of information other than just for adult returns or for harvest. It gives us information on, especially if some folks would get on board with putting pit tag detectors in the spillways, then we get a lot more detections and could probably tell a lot about project survival without.
The biological opinion I know in our insects does call for a lot more tagging of representative stocks throughout the basin. So there might be some opportunities to use what you're doing and supplement that other database once we start getting a handle on how many of those fish we can kind of expect to return. I certainly wouldn't want us to not be cognizant that other thing is out there as we're going for all this.
Yeah, that's the kind of.
The other thing, as far as impacts, I mean, has anybody looked at the survival of the fish you're pit tagging to key points compared to fish that return with pit tags in them through the same reaches? I mean, has that been done? Under the current way things are operating, are those pretty similar? Are we seeing discrepancies? Has anybody looked? That's my question.
Not something I've looked at. It would be something. There's been some good discussions that have come out of this and things that I want to look at, and that's one of them, along with some of the differences between fish you tag, how fast it goes through the bottom of the dam versus, plasmid versus same fish. One problem with that is that we are potentially dealing with two different groups of fish in terms of the estimation that the tagged fish and juveniles are not representative of what we're attacking. But I think as more and more juveniles get tagged, at least for some of the stuff that we're doing, if you can start to use more and more, maybe use ours as kind of a baseline and then try to use the ones that are previously tagged fish to increase your sample size. Unless you do a lot of pit tagging in a lot of places, I'm not sure you totally get away from it.
I'm thinking of fall chinook as an example. I mean, there's basically one population of fall chinook in Idaho. The genetics are pretty tight there. So if you're tagging fish that you later know are snicker or fall chinook, you can compare the passage conversion rates of those fish to the general population. At least you should be able to negate a genetic issue there and start to.
Also, that's interesting that we've got the one big stock, the Hanford Reach, we've had a hard time reclaiming the pit tag of those fish.
We
have managed for the last few years, but we've got done for this coming year. We pit tag 20,000 fish, which means a return of half of 1%, and probably not even that, which means 100 fish coming back to Bonneville, which is not a whole lot. And probably less than that, we'll see. We only had managed to tag 16,000 last year, and we did a lot of small fish, so there was probably worse.
It was made out of turnips. I mean, if we had index populations that were, I don't understand the harvest management mix. I know that there's, you're looking at certain abundances of certain stocks relative to others and making decisions on that. But are there index stocks that can be used for that are fairly abundant that we can look at relative to other stocks, regardless of how many tanks come back, as long as there's enough. We can start making some inferences from those relative abundances and say, yeah, this stock makes up 80%, this stock makes up 20%, you know, whatever of what's out there, bottom of the dam. Just based on pit tags alone, just based on what we tagged. You know, we go out and tag those fish early in their life history, get them back. You don't have everything. I know you don't have everything. Not every stock out there would have a representative abundance of fish tags. Certain stocks would have a lot of you guys have been doing this for a long time. So you must have some ideas about relative abundances of one group against another and how that plays out every year.
Well, the harvest manager realm. Yeah. Regarding some of the SISMIP stuff I was involved with, seemed to indicate 100 was kind of a key number for doing some stuff in terms of returns. And so 20,000 Hanford fall chinook that costs. In addition to the coda wire tagging program, if you start from scratch, it's really expensive. But in addition to the coda wire tagging program, you're looking at an increment of maybe $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Plus that much more. So it's actually pretty expensive to do a lot of wild fish. And Hanford Reach is probably one of the easier places to collect them from. At least there's a lot of them you can go after. Although it's a little hard to weir off a river, which has its own impacts.
And so basically the fall chinook harvest management is keyed off of impacts to the upriver bright stock. The upriver bright stock for the purposes of harvest management is all of the fall chinook above McNary plus the Deschutes. And then we've got what we call the mid-Columbia bright hatchery fish, which are hatchery fish originating from Bonneville, Little White, Klickitat, and Umatilla hatcheries.
And those are the index tagged. The problem is the fall chinook.
Yeah. And the trick is currently, as far as fall chinook that are pit tagged, we've got a high proportion of the hatchery fish in the Snake Basin relatively are pit tagged, but that's a tiny percentage of the bright stock fall chinook, and so most of the fall chinook pit tags you see are Snake River fall chinook, but that's not representative of the overall, well, and even of the upriver brights are not all that representative because in most years, the Hanford population dwarfs the Snake River population. And so Jeff brings up the problem to in order to do a more representative sampling of that would involve this massive effort at trying to get your hands on Hanford fish. And also Deschutes fish, which are also part of the Upper River Bright population in there, and those would also be trying to trap wild fish. And we've done some trapping to try and code wire tag Deschutes fish, and it was a challenging project to catch enough Deschutes fall Chinook to get any meaningful numbers of fish back.
So the Deschutes fall Chinook population estimate or percentage is used in the harvest management scheme in some way as a plug-in number?
We're developing forecasts based on spawning returns primarily, those get lumped into it. But it's a very small portion of the
overall. Yeah, is that really necessary, or could you just make the assumption that it's a percentage?
Yeah.
This percent, maybe.
But it is a stock that's of interest to the managers for its own purposes, because sure.
It's an indicator stock in the Pacific salmon tree. So it carries with it some additional Pacific salmon tree allocations that are a little bit separate from just the USVR applications, which are, as Stuart was explaining. We've got to track that stock in terms of its annual spawning, whether it's growing or shrinking and eating. You know, it's in relatively good shape right now, but compared to NOSAC and some other indicator stocks on the West Coast, but it is one that we have to track for purposes of treating.
So, it's probably a stupid question, but if you're tagging 1,100 fall Chinook back to target, how many of those fish turn out to be Deschutes River fall Chinook?
We'll find out this year.
Yeah, we
will.
This is the first year.
And then going back to the populations like Deschutes, and we have a couple different issues here. We have Sturgeon attack, we work on our inherited fisheries, but then because of the September treaty, we also monitor all these different stocks as indicator stocks out of the ocean harvest as well. And so we've done all
our
inner populations and shoot populations, and then indicator stocks as well.
Why do they have to be put away?
For ocean harvest.
It's the only way they can tell what they are in the U.S. Yeah.
The whole ocean fisheries do
Ocean caught it. Ocean caught fish are cleaned at sea, and you lose the pit tanks.
it's a big infrastructure question.
Okay, but can we start changing this process somewhere? That's what I'm after. I'm either hearing that we can't do anything, or we're stuck.
It's a good question.
The way it is, or can we move forward?
There was an expert panel report on the whole quarter direct tag database system for the West Coast fisheries. You're talking about convincing Alaska, Canada, Washington, California, and Oregon to rearrange the way they assess the abundance of fish in the ocean and the way they are managing their fisheries, which is all based on total wet head.
I understand. So, it's a monstrous issue.
The expert panel, which was run out of Humboldt and included scientists from up and down the West Coast bilateral, had significant recommendations associated with. They looked at switching technology and considered some of the pros and cons of that. And decided for a variety of reasons that at least in the current situation it's important to keep what we got. The Chinook post-run management of Chinook, which is driven partly by Columbia River in a big way, driven by Columbia River because of the Walters consent decree, because of their migratory habits. It's a big deal in a bilateral context between the United States and Canada. It's important that we have good abundance estimates. so much. Part of the reason why Spring Creek Hatchery is important, right? Part of the reason why we have to maintain some tule production in the Columbia River is because we start messing around with Walshnut production in the Columbia River that changes the composition of the Canadian fishery off the west coast of Vancouver Island. And they start getting the Nooksack stocks higher than they had envisioned, and the whole ESA stuff goes upside down. It's a complicated mix up in the ocean. I don't pretend to understand all of this, but maybe I am pretending, but there are people that understand this a whole lot better than me. It's a frustrating thing for a lot of people to be wedded as deeply as we are to go to our thinking, as people would like to go to some,
why can't some of these be involved with some of both?
Well, there is, it's a practical matter, there is some of both. But, genetic stuff doesn't give you age. So you can do SNP stuff. And this is my understanding, you can do a lot of SNP stuff, but you don't know if the SNP data is a 3-year-old fish, a 4-year-old big fish, or a 5-year-old fish. That's a big deal. That's a big deal if you're trying to manage age-specific harvest skills.
Yeah, it's going to be that, and it only takes the fish to get the information and pass it back to the fish, so we get information off of everything. That's, we're not going to settle that here anyway, but all I'm looking for is maybe the people here but we need to move.
Research is being done, on the Pacific Salmon Commission side, research is being done, and proposals come out every year, RFPs come out every year, board proposals to look at GSI, look at the tag, that sort of thing. There's some test cases. Our contingent at the Falls Chinook in Hanford is a test case. We'll see how that, requires Falls Chinook to come out of the system, and whatever the action is out of the ocean, we have potential there. And then, the number of fish would come back. And so research is definitely being done on this.
Yeah.
It's going to take time before it
changes. Part of the problem that is, too, you've got to handle the fish that come in, right? Which is another thing.
But if we're just going to do things the way we've always done, that's what bothers me. I want to see movement away from kind of the old intensive practices to something that's giving us more information or a little less intensive. That's all I'm looking for.
My sense is we'd like to be able to deploy, at least try out the video technology for steelhead.
Yeah,
and steelhead present their own different challenges from the shrimp cycles. And, whether we're really going to go after the genetics information on steelhead, which might be really interesting, or trying to get by with this. A lot of people aren't particularly happy with this one right here. But considering the bloodletting that's going on in USB Oregon to reel even that length criteria, and how far as part of the 10-year portal for people to change it wouldn't be easy. Hopefully we get a better handle on the holes in the stock composition and the steel there are big at the end, everybody knows. Saw those today either.
So as I understand from talking about Peter, a B-run steelhead or another one they have in those fisheries.
Yeah.
So there's a big drive to try to parse out A-run from B-run and then the genetic stuff to marry up with the link stuff so that at the end of the day you know what the link thing is even working on.
Yeah. And I think I still see that we ought to be able to do that through video technology. The composition of the B-rod, A-rod to be done at the other end of the migration corridor doesn't have to be done here. So I don't think we have an animal to fish to get that. And it occurs to me that Thule and River Bright can also be a video. There's some potential for video enumeration there too, given just the reflectance differences, I think.
Jeff? They already do that. Well, I could use video. I mean, you have a second observer there.
Automated
doesn't get at, it doesn't get at, you know, every little stock and every stream, but it can.
And all of this movement on the monitoring side, I think people are interested in doing that. And that's, you know, at the same time, we might be interested in trying to figure out a better, a little better hydraulic condition and sampling facility for fish that have to re-entering. This problem with the pool, what you mentioned with the pool, isn't the first time I've heard that problem. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah.
How people come into the lab.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, I see that as one issue. And no matter whether we're tracking for, you know, facility evaluation or anything, I see that facility beefed up and improved. But just the sheer, what bothers me more than anything else is that we end up with, you know, 70, 71, 72 degree of water, and we're told we've got to get in there. We've got to have all this information. And here's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 reasons why. Is there some way that we can at least get a few of those reasons taken care of and not handle the fish so that we don't lose everything if we're not in there? Because at some temperatures, we're just not going to be in there. And the information, they didn't have, you know, a blank space in your information, your data. Can we at least get some of this? It's ARB to a split, 2 lead versus up at the bright, straight off the top of the dome. We always do that. I don't have to worry about temperatures. So, and that's a step that I would like to at least take some of those reasons away from having to be in there. That lessens the sting a little bit from, you know, not having to be in there, not being able to be in there.
The genetics and tracing these fish upstream of pit tags, the best way to get at it. Does that suddenly make any sense?
You figure out whether this life thing really means something in terms of which fish are going where. And then if we find out that the life thing is representative of a meaningful split, then you can just use video technology and get away from some of this one intensity.
Yeah.
That's a plan. I mean, that's what I like. I mean, that's the kind of thing I'm looking for is this research, we're moving towards a way to get away from this, and this is something to get you there, then great. I just don't want to see us get stuck in the wells there with the use of the routine.
Yeah, so I think the tribes would be quite open to trying to figure out the meaning of the A fish, B fish thing, and trying to figure out if there's some better way to manage steelhead like that if the current 78 centimeter criteria means anything useful or not. I think that'd be fine. I think also working toward using video counts to the extent that we, you know, need to manage for some sort of length-based criteria for steelhead, using video counts to get that. If we can set up a system to do that, that's fine too. There would still be an issue, though, with forecasting steelhead, just like with forecasting Chinook, though, is that we need age data. And we're getting the age data currently from scales for steelhead. And so, you know, and maybe you could get age data if you had some massive steelhead pit tagging thing as juvenile, so you had enough age, known age fish coming back, and you know that might be okay. Well, actually, some of our tribes are pit tagging enough fish that we're actually getting a little pushback on pit tagging more fish from some of our tribal policy people because they don't find it appropriate to handle so many juvenile fish. Of course, they might also be in the same position that they wouldn't see handling these fish in the AFF is a good idea either. But the that being, we still have a need for age-based data for forecasts. So in a way, yeah, I think we could maybe agree to, you know, set up some, go off and some, march off somewhere to like, you know, work on the meaning of these A versus B steelhead. We could We could work on devising some clever video scheme to try and accurately measure the length of these fish in the windows somehow. Those will, of course, take money. We don't have money, and we'd have to look over to Rock and see how fat his wallet is. And so we could probably agree to do that. But then we still have the age-based stuff, and I'm a little stumped as to how, in the near term, we get age-based stuff. I might be able to devise it. You know, in the future, we will work toward this, but that doesn't get us past our immediate need that we need some age-based stuff this year.
We're going to be sent for sure out there. I think we've got ideas on the laws to do that, except that the temperatures get too high. I think then everybody has to step back.
So yeah, and then we're going to be faced with holes in the data at some point. But
get some data here. But I don't see us as, if you guys are proposing to work towards a longer-term solution with near-term research, that's fine. That's great. That's what I like to hear. Working for us instead of, we just have to do this.
Well, a lot of this, there's a big ultimate plan. So our base thing initially was the age stock composition. So we get the age data for the river management, but also for ocean management. But our long-term goal has been pit-tagging, and that's why we did two studies right now, Sockeye and then Summer Chinook. Well, actually three now, so Summer Chinook and then Fall Chinook. But as time goes on, for further upstream with inter-pit detection systems, you can tag your 1,000 fish here or 500 fish here, and then the fish upstream at the terminal areas don't get handled, and maybe don't have weirs blocking the entire streams and the spawning areas and so on. So we have this open idea of, maybe you handle the fish once, and then they don't get handled up above.
Yeah.
And the big ones that are never going to go away are going to be, we need that age composition for everything other than FOMO. And we're always going to need a stock composition. And what the pit tag does with pit tag detection systems gives you a much better accounting of the number of stock-specific escapements, which right now are based on, very similar to the A and B run splits, they're based on 2.3 fish per red, or where did those numbers come from?
Right.
Likewise, the pit tag project here is also, we're going to be increasing catch sampling of all the harvest. And so we're going to get a much better idea of hooking mortality and all these different things. And so there is a big goal, just wanting to get out there and just, handle fish with say handling fish. And a lot of it is, okay, take care of things here.
Right.
We can answer that. A lot of these questions have been unanswered forever. And then, also limit the amount of handling, later on in internal areas.
Well, but even here, what bothers me handling here is you're handling, you're affecting the entire club, you're going to run for a long time. That's a lot.
Well, we're there for a few hours. It's just like with granite. They're sampling 20% of what's going over granite. Well, they're sampling less than 1% this year for some stocks. Summer Chinook is way less than 1% right now. In the past several years, because of temperature restrictions, we're sampling a fraction of the steel number. And right now, we have a lot of temperatures. Chinook. Basically, the above 700 has developed thermal barrier, and the steelhead doesn't really bother because that's 70% of brine goes through in August and early September. So that's where we're stuck. Is we need to get this information, this age, and how much. Overall, we're sampling a small portion of the brine.
I know, but it's still a risk.
So I've got another question. And that is, if you've got harvested fish, you can get tissue samples from that. But the problem is, you don't know whether or not they represent the full spread of the fish are out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the representative of this would be an issue with the harvested. You also.
You're scared for a variety of reasons, and Stuart probably help out a little bit more, but there's. A lot of the harvest is you have bigger sections, you have net size restrictions because you're trying to have steelhead and not Chinook, and so this is max, and so we can come up with the same expansion.
And the harvests don't always occur uniformly throughout the timing of the run. So I've seen some seasons where we're concentrating harvest at certain times and may be impacting, may have differential harvest rates on some stocks.
Right.
But isn't, I thought this was, this information, and then I don't know either, but I thought the idea was to look at the composition of the run that existing this year and compare that to harvest to see if the harvest rates are overtaking certain stocks, or that's real time. I'm not sure if this is being used real time.
The steelhead stuff is, because actually the, so for fall season steelhead, we've got a 15% harvest rate on the combined hatchery and wild bee run fish. It used to be just on the wild, but now it's hatchery and wild combined. And so we actually, we're going to start commercial fishing next week, and we'll go out and we will, our catch monitors actually measure fish that are caught. And so we will know how many of these bee run fish we have caught, and we're going to divide that by the estimate of how many bee run fish went by Bonneville, and so that that AB split at Bonneville is critical for dividing the number into.
That was very correct. I understand that. What I'm not sure about is the other stocks.
For spring chinook, we're managing all the upriver spring chinook as one group for purposes of harvest management. But the age stuff is critical, because that actually we're doing that separate. We're actually generating forecasts for separate groups. For summer chinook, we're managing summer chinook as if they are all Upper Columbia summer chinook as one group, and then fall chinook, we're managing for the impacts are limited based on the upriver bright fish, but we're looking at Spring Creek tules separately. Snake River fish kind of broken out from upriver brights, and then making sure we're getting hatchery escapement to the Mid Columbia hatchery, or the what we call Mid Columbia bright hatchery facilities.
So it's, from what I heard, that it sounded to me like the most important breakdown, the most important stock-specific information you need is for fall chinook, really, because they own two in Indiana as a mass, mass group.
Although for all the sampling, all that age-based data is really critical for doing forecasting.
Does it require, to get the age-based data, is it required the same sample rates, or can you take that some?
Well, we want a sufficient sample size so that when you say that, you know, this year's return was X percent jacks, you know, Y percent 4-year-olds or whatever, that those percentages are accurate enough so that when you're using those, we're doing typically age-based regressions is kind of the standard way. So you're looking at a series of returns over years, and so you're looking at how well a brood returns, and you're presuming basically that there's a relationship between if there's a strong return of jacks this year, that means that based on historic patterns that you're going to get this many of the next year's older fish for the next year. And so if you're loused up on that proportion of jacks, then it throws your forecast off.
The jacks aren't your primary concern here, is it? Because if they are, why are we counting them separately without handling? So you're looking at also for
it's right.
And can that be done in any way at all? Well, first, the harvest probably isn't being managed directly on that. I mean, you don't have a quota of 5-year-olds out there.
Right,
the harvest,
that's correct.
There's nobody who's gone, oops.
Right. Although we do sample the harvest for age-based data, and that goes into the mix of how
we're trying to establish if this is a post-harvest issue, or if this is
For the age-based stuff, it's really a post-harvest issue. We need we need all the age data put together by December for spring and summer chinook, and by February for fall chinook. But currently, we don't have any way other than scale samples to.
What do they do with that data? What do they use it for management?
The scale data is all used for forecasting.
Forecast, and yes. You can break, change the...
Yeah.
This is setting up arcs and borders for the next year. And there's no way that could be done based on size. I mean, there's no hands-off approach currently.
In theory, you could do it if you had a zillion pit tank fish out there, but we don't have currently have the capacity to do that.
Are there ways to subsample? I mean, are there groups that are representative enough of other groups that you could do more pit tagging or something on those groups to represent a bigger reality, bigger sample? Have you looked at that kind of stuff?
Not so much.
The big issue is always pit tagging as wild fish.
The key thing is we actually we've got enough hatchery return data that you could do hatchery based, you could forecast hatchery fish almost in a lot of cases almost without any sampling at Bonneville, but the wild fish are a big mystery as to what your age composition is of wild fish.
One way we do have fish in hand is harvest, of course. Any way to get these data, that's not selective, I realize, to some degree, probably against jacks at least, maybe not so much against the other sizes of adults. So is there any way to get those fish, those data on fish that have been harvested that year already dead? No impact. Is there a bias associated with that? There probably is.
I'm not sure the problem would be adjusting for the bias. We would assume that there would be some variety of biases to it.
Based on gear selection, too, but is there a way to adjust for that and maybe get away from the intensity? Again, I'm just trying to look for ways to get this off the fish that are already in hand.
I'm not really aware of.
So the right now the reason that the ladders are such an attractive sampling site is because it's not selective.
Everything's got to go by.
So
we have a new idea, Richie.
No, I'm just thinking it, and just toss an idea up there. But ideally, you would have some sort of harvest methodology that wasn't selective at all.
We operate as under the assumption that most of our harvests are relatively unselective, but in reality they probably are not all that. I mean, it probably varies from time to time because we know from the pit take data we've got lots of different stocks moving through at different times, different years. Sometimes some groups are a little early, some groups are a little late, and so we may not be actually when it gets down to certain groups and then plus currently under the. Under the current funding for our harvest monitoring, we're, say in an average spring Chinook year, we might be limited to a 7 to 10% harvest rate on upper river spring Chinook. So that would be the most you'd ever see. But then we're only sampling 20% of that catch. We're only looking at 20% of that catch, and we're not always even taking biosamples from all that. So it would potentially demand a big increase in funding for samplers.
That's the problem. Again, there's a selectivity issue. There's probably some selectivity in one ladder model than versus another too.
It's come up several times.
Yeah.
I have a question. What would you do if, say, the AFF was not, you couldn't use it, it burned down? Was that a thing?
I didn't hear that.
No idea, Tammy.
For you know, for doing forecasts for last year, also we didn't have the age data for Chinook, we would probably cobble together as much age data we could get from hatcheries and spawning ground surveys and from the fisheries, and probably make some wild ass guesses about what the, you know, wild fish age composition would be based on how that compares to past data we had, and probably muddle through and accept that our forecast might be a little crazy for a year or two.
Eventually work it out.
Well, yeah, or yeah, eventually we just accept it as way off the. But then for you know, for it would cause probably an immediate crisis in the A-B split for fall season fisheries. Because if all of a sudden we were to like stop any steelhead sampling today for this year, come late September when folks are wondering how we're doing on a 15% harvest rate on B-run steelhead, and we'll sit like,
we could do better than that. We could do, come on, everybody who goes to the window, standing there, I've seen where people do this all the time. There goes an A-run. There's a B-run.
Yeah.
You can have maybe more in between where you have uncertainty, but just your
majority. So
there's going to be a band of uncertainty there.
I mean, as always, we always muddle through when you can't do something, but it certainly it wouldn't be doing business the best way you could. No, we wouldn't propose not fishing, I think.
All right, Rob, are you taking some of the information you want to get?
Oh, no. Way more. No, this has actually been good for me. And this is probably old hat for a lot of you, but so Gary, I think I've heard you say a couple of times today that at some point water temps, you guys just are not agreeable to handling at all or going into a facility at all. About what temperature is that? 72.
Has
it changed very high? Okay, so what happens when we're at 72? We're not there yet.
When the time rides out, that's a lock on the door.
Yep.
More or less.
And how often does that actually occur?
Over 72.
Depends on the year. You know, it's not.
I know what we're saying. Currently, we have two different temperature restrictions. Formerly, we had two different temperature restrictions. This year, we agreed to not sample about 72, which is fine with us because it's typically for a very, very short time period.
Yeah.
And the big problem we have is the conditions where we're at right now, which is the 72. So we come out and sample earlier. And it does create somewhat of a thermal barrier for Chinook. The problem is, as Jeff was saying, is as temperatures start coming down, as the fall Chinook start coming in, and we can't get back in the lab until temperatures drop to the temperature doesn't mean. The average daily temperature would have to drop to 69.5 before we can go and sample it. Which, you know, like leading up to the temperatures hitting 70 right now, I mean, that the average daily temperature was that going was that for weeks, maybe 2 weeks, you know, in the mid 69.5, 69.3. You know, so it's extreme, you know, going a half a degree for average daily temperature, I mean, it might spend a lot.
So what we need here then is to, number one, 72 is agreed. From what I hear,
everybody,
that's down, we're not doing it. But between 70 and 72, that's the biggest problem, that's the biggest period of time. You guys need a way to get more than two fish a day, and we need to come up with that now, this year. And it isn't going to be our little parallel leads because we don't have time to get that in. So we need to come up with another alternative for that. And we're dead set against four leads going in and walking around with the numbers of fish we have coming. You guys have told us that three leads doesn't cut it. It's two is three, there's still going on by. And I want to make sure that's true because one of your fishers out there said, oh, we'll take three, but I'm not sure that he's.
Well, because it's just. Three's got to be better than two, but. We ended up being okay.
I don't have a problem.
And it's pretty funny because we were talking about fish intelligence, you know, earlier this year, and that, you know, using the two and three. Actually worked out okay for sockeye.
But Chinook, you know, these turtles were smarter than I saw a guy in. We just worked, we missed out on our summer Chinook. And and so now that, and then at that time, you know, prior to basically July 1st, you don't have a whole lot in the way of summer steelhead yet. And so we weren't quite sure, you know, the intelligence of steelhead, and we're finding out they're, you know, smarter than Chinook.
Okay.
So that's our problem right now, is we're getting worried. For our four days of this week, we're sampling from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. We almost got 20 steelhead, and we have over 20,000 going over in the week.
So four is not enough. Three's, or four is enough. We don't like that.
Four is not enough.
Three is not enough. We want six. So the other alternative is then to go to four leagues for a very short period of time.
Right.
A half hour or an hour in the morning, and then go back to your two leagues. That's the other alternative that I heard folks talk about various times. Anything else? Any other? The other one was go to four leagues for a half hour, go back to two leads for an hour, go back to four leads for a half hour, go back to two leads for an hour, that sort of thing.
And what we've asked for in the past, and part of it is, we're kind of getting a little frustrated on that, we'll agree to two for an hour, and maybe four for the first hour, and then two, and then they kind of just bouncing back and forth, and then who makes the call, and why, and we've been sampling this facility for Jeff's been involved for over 20 years, and I've been involved for 10. And of course, nobody likes to hear it, but the raising and lowering mass needed, because we agree. We want fish to pass. We want the best survival possible. Have a fish with sample, fish with pit tag. Of course, we want to survive. And so I understand the allergy, because people have misused that in the past. But if we can show up at four leagues down and lift them out for an hour, maybe two, and basically adjust our sampling for our needs. I know it's difficult to...
My concern isn't so much that. It isn't so much that we do something this year or whatever we do this year. It's that we don't accept it as status quo for the next 25 years.
Right.
That's my main concern.
So
get away from this somehow down the road. This year's is not as much of a concern as mine as it is the next 10 hours. So
like right now, with the just over 20,000 steelhead, passing, if we could get 50 fish, 50 steelhead in that first couple of hours, we can pack up and go home. Because right now, with 300 or 400 Chinook coming over in a day, we only need five. And so our idea is, if we can get in there, use the facility as it's currently designed for now. If we can get in there, get our sample. In the shortest period of time, when we get out of there, we're fine. We don't need to be there for extended period of time, and then the sooner we lift off, we'll take a lazy bet.
Is there a chance here in this group, I don't know why, the Rock can call this kind of together about the nexus, if this is a federal meeting, if this is an SRWG, if this is a TAC meeting, what this is. Is there a chance that we can, through this group, develop a sort of long-term plan for the EFF and not just get past this year and then worry about it later? And I want to come away with something more than that while we had this one.
Well, that was my goal in the first place.
I know.
Well, Gary, good.
But what the right forum is,
this is really old.
We haven't actually sat there contemplating this, but I saw what the needs were. When Rob laid those out, what I heard was primarily harvest management type needs. And I'm not even sure how all this gets paid for, so I'm curious about all that. You guys can really educate me on that. And maybe that's something we can talk. When you mentioned, this time the core fund, I realized that may have been a joke.
It was mostly a joke, but it is
interesting that you guys just got an approved program which requires some very specific needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have no clue how that's all managed. And maybe I don't need to know that, but I think there's a nexus there that we don't need to talk.
I think Congressman Dix and Senator Murray are
probably
part of that nexus.
Probably.
I don't want to give you a quick overview of the way the Pacific Salmon Treaty Center is one of the
for a fair amount of the state effort is going to the state management effort goes to the Department of Commerce, the tribal effort goes to the Department of Interior, and right now there are negotiations ongoing. Part of the treaty commitment involves a cash payment of about $30 million to Canada and a cash payment of $15 million to Alaska. It may, that cash payment for Alaska may grow to $30 million for what's called the South. The South is Oregon, Washington, and the tribes.
That's where this money would come from.
Well, no, I mean we don't. Oh, for our monitoring, there is an established sort of stream of appropriations for Pacific Salmon Treaty implementation. Again, that goes through Interior and Commerce. Okay. The state and NOAA funding goes to Commerce. The tribal funding, in addition to all that sheriff's funding, goes through Interior. We've all been operating at relatively static funding levels through the Bush administration. There's a chance with a brand new treaty that we can prevail upon the delegation to address some additional needs. For me, some of the initial act needs come to mind, as well as maybe some of the sampling stuff. I don't know. I don't see the money coming through, I'm just thinking out loud here, Rock, but if we were to go to Murray or Dix, we'd probably say, to make the Pacific Salmon Treaty piece work, we need some money directed to the Corps of Engineers to assist with the sampling facility at Bonneville Dam, which is a critical component of our overall management, and direct that through CG or O&M, whatever is most appropriate. Don't run it through Interior and then make Interior transfer the money to the Corps. But who knows?
I was just trying to get to Gary's question.
Alternately, we could try and work, but at the same time, we'll work that way. Probably try and want to work the administration side, and we understand the kind of constraints that you guys have. But if we can get you to support this kind of fix as well, so we're working from both the congressional side and the administration side. I think that increases our odds of success. And I think there's, even though this is harvest management, one of the things we're really trying to accomplish in the MOA is sort of get a little bit beyond the distinction of harvest management versus hatchery management versus hydro management, and recognize that we all need to square our urban track. I thought we had to kind of change things.
I was just trying to think about how we address Gary's long-term need. It is very difficult for us to, we're project funded, and missions of the Corps have to somehow deal with this as they relate to funding needs. And for us, harvest is not even on our vision anywhere. So it is difficult to see how I can make that connection. Now, if it's related to sampling, related to what others are needing, then I think we can work some of those. A question maybe further on this. So Tammy, first of all, being the boss at Bonneville, sorry, Ben. Locking the gate on. Does this first short term for this year, is this agreeable to where you're sitting? What we were talking about a few minutes ago with Gary, which I believe was, and I didn't get it all clear, I'd like to write it down, but it's four leads for a shorter duration of time.
Yeah.
Up to in that 70 to 72 degree temp.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, it'd be either three leads.
The first hour of the morning.
Yeah, either three leads, which you guys say, no, that doesn't work, then the next level is all four of these, but for a half hour, maybe an hour, and the first hour of the morning, you know what you get. I work with that. That does sound a lot
of fish. Then if they don't, do they drop back to three leads and continue to fish?
Yeah.
Does that, I want somebody to write this down so somebody understands.
It's on.
I'll be sure. She's what she calls
I'm recording
degrees
it.
Of getting worse. Yeah, that's a degrees of impact on what this is. So I'm just trying to step through it. You know, maybe it's something he's going
to do. We tried it in late June, 4 hours for the first, 4 weeks for the first hour, and then 3 weeks the rest of the day. And our sample sizes were about half of what they were when we needed to go back to 4 weeks all day. We were getting 15 to 20 Chinook per day in early July. And then on July 7th, we went back to 4 weeks all day, and the runs were seeing declined during that period, and we went up to 40. So I don't know. Maybe the fall Chinook behaved differently, but the track record is not good.
That sounds pretty good, Lee.
But the,
well,
it depends.
Yeah, I mean, from 2 to how many?
Yeah, from 2 to 15.
From the 70 to 72 criteria, we agreed to cut back to 4 days a week versus 5, and limit sampling from 6 to 10, you know, which is 4 hours.
First
hour, 1 hour, and third hour, so it's really a 3 hour period.
However, this year, from 70 to 72, they do have a bit of an increase, because last year, didn't we just cut you back to one day a week?
Yes, but we had 4 days back last year.
I don't know that you had 4. We're thinking it might have just been 3. Well, that may be something we'll have to look into.
We negotiated for 4 last year.
Huh.
Are we close for understanding where we're at here?
And we understand. We don't want to block off the ladder for the entire time.
Yeah, I'm just dead saying it's 4 hour or 4 leads down.
Well, and you may not need to. I mean, what I'm asking for is the flexibility to raise and lower, and I'm fine with that. But as soon as we say, you know, 4 for a half an hour, and then we come back to 3, and then
let's
two,
go for one at 4 leads per trust hour. And, well, you guys will have that as long as you need to get the fish. I know that. But I mean, that's,
well, I mean, that's the thing. If we can get the 40 steelhead we need for that day, 1 hour, we're out there, we're done.
Instead
we don't continually sample.
Instead of max.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the max you'd use would be 3 hours. Because if it takes an hour from the fish to get from the picket lead to the AFF, there's no sense having it down for the last hour anyways, because that fish isn't going to get to the AFF in time. So the max would be, you'd probably want it for your first 3 hours.
Well, I'd like to see you guys start out with 1 hour. Just go with 1 hour and see how you're doing this.
How about instead of 1 hour, why not? After you see 5 fish or something, and
you
can
pull them out.
Well,
but see, it takes an hour to get out there. You're already going to have it an hour.
You've got an hour's worth
of first fish. So
you've got an hour's worth of fish that are
so bad. It's really beyond that.
At that point, I mean, I just talking to the fishers out there this morning, it sounded like they said, you know, it takes a half hour, an hour from those fish to start showing up. That kind of breaks up the system.
So they try to
just a little flash coming through. It's,
well, and that's right. You know, so you get that, you fill a fish ladder, like right now, with the number of fish that are coming through, and you can fill it up for that first hour. You have fish coming, you know, for hour 2, and then maybe part into hour 3, and then we're filling funds for the last 45 minutes, maybe the last hour.
That's what you get
home. With 10 fish instead of 3, I mean, it's still, like, it's... And it's difficult, we understand. I mean, but, you know.
I think we have to, I think you have
yeah, if we can,
to
if we can
work up to it. I mean, if right. You try that and you're not still not getting the fish, then come back and say,
and we
that's
can,
not
we
working.
Can, we can play around with that.
But on the other hand, if we can do it with a half hour.
The transaction costs associated with coming back are significant. We had that 30 times. We got 20 people in this room that took a month to set up this meeting. Coming back, and general sense is not something that's really difficult. We need something where we can make a decision in on an hour's notice or on 2 hours' notice.
reset the stage here. Our original, I don't know whether it happened on this, but our original Section 10 permit said that we will not have a fish above 16 degrees. And that's what we were telling the world up to a few years ago. And I don't know what's happened with Section 10 permit regulations, but at 68 degrees, we said no more hammering fish or that sound. So, I mean, that's, you know, we're talking about 2 degrees over that. And we're talking about a level that is at the upper threshold of sound. So this is an issue. You know, just letting it go and not worry about that is
something we're not saying it's going to be.
That's what we don't want to do here. We want to make sure we'll keep this.
All I'm saying is if we're going to set up another one of these meetings to revisit this issue.
I want to walk away with something that we can work with.
Yeah, these guys need some clear guidance.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So, can you help me understand the process? You go through the sample, so you drop all four leads in. It takes an hour or so for the fish that are being collected by that processing system. When do you go down and look at the fish and have some sort of estimate of how many fish are loaded into that system? I mean, at the end of that first hour, what do you know?
Well, I mean, it's a great fish are coming through.
Washington used to utilize that for tools.
I mean, you can have somebody, the picket lead goes down, somebody goes there and sits at the cap window and says, look, we got several hundred fish going out.
So
the count, the picket leads go down, the count window is immediately right there next to the fish line. Mm-hmm. And then it takes an hour for the fish to come up. And yeah.
But you know, how many are in the queues going to the track.
So yeah, that's a way to minimize it.
I think what you're hearing is the fear on our side is you overload the thing, you end up with 400 fish pounds in there or something. And the concern on your side is that by taking actions to prevent that, you end up with nothing. So, you know, we're trying to figure out, based on the information that is known in that system, how can we manage in real time to balance those.
Right.
That facility is still working.
Yeah, it just doesn't have a cleaner. So
and the crowder's been pulled out, so it's a much wider opening than it used to be.
So it'd be a minimum sample of what you saw, maybe more.
Yeah, but at these flows, that water's pretty clear.
Let's say
you count 300 fish, and as long as it's clean, you close the system, and the fish just hang up the ladder and don't migrate to the collection pool, or maybe migrate to the collection pool, but then they don't go down. The flumes, I mean,
we're all taking our risks here. I mean, this
is not good.
We can just walk away.
We can find out if that's what we have happened.
So let me understand.
Well, I mean, we still have the time restriction. So you see 300 fish, you know, go through, that should be enough. We close, we're going to put the tickets, and we sit around, and we only have 4 hours.
If we get the time thing and rewatch it, you can actually learn to see what these things are behaving. So you don't necessarily say quota, it's only fish, but you're going to say time, and you're going to get an idea by watching that thing, how they behave, and how many are coming by, and how long it takes for you to get their sample. So with that added information, so you might be able to figure that out.
Oh,
I mean,
you need about 40 to 50 steel. I just think that this may not be perfect, but I think using the solar window as an option to circumvent all of our risk management here. So
yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's probably worth a try.
It's an interesting idea. I haven't been there for a long time. You would have to have, I guess you first have to sit down your account. Of course, I'm always lined with a video, and after the fact, you correlate numbers of fish
I guess the problem would be the steel that everyone holds up for long periods of time, which they do the time, but
I'm just wondering about running the trap a longer period of time once you know your fish are in and you shut off and you pull your leads out.
Then
the ladder's back to normal.
Yeah, and then what's our baseline right now? Like, I have no idea. I mean, how many fish did you go through there to get how many fish in how many hours?
What I'm saying is, if you know you've got, you know, say you need 30 or 45, and then you wait till you get 60 fish in the past, okay, and that may not take very long before leads out. It may not take any time at all. Then you pull your leads out, pull everything up, and find out. If it takes you 8 hours of sitting in there, then it takes you 8 hours to find out, then you'll probably find out. I mean, ask the question.
Right.
Really doing the video camera.
It wouldn't have to be every day, because you'll probably find out that it doesn't take that long. But you're wondering that right now, so find out.
The only question is it the amount of time picket leads down, or is it the cost of like 4 days a week? Because last year we sat for what, 1 day a week with four picket leads for 4 hours? And we got the sample. Would that be better?
We didn't get the sample last year, but we got a lot more.
That was the question. Would it be better to go back to like less lengths to do once a week with more picket leads, or to go 4 times a week with this more modified picket lead operation? I would too, but it's like I also want to be able to get a reasonable sample. If you don't get any fish, then you're still not getting any samples.
I understand the resistance
here.
If you see the fish coming through, you know
they're going to
use it for 4 hours.
Oh, I use the cat window?
It takes 3 hours.
That little cat window? Is that what you're basing this on? Use that little cat window?
Yeah.
I think you want to go take a look at it first before you hinge your hole. Recently?
No.
If the thing hasn't been cleaned, and there's no crowder in there, you know what the thing's going to look like?
I've never brushed it.
What's your problem?
I'm saying you might want to look at it first before we hinge our whole management strategy here on.
It's a decent place to count fish. You can clean the window. You can clean the spiders out of there.
It's not the spiders I'm worried about. It's inside the window I'm worried about.
Hey, Ron, I've been thinking about it. Now, in the long term, this solution using that count window, if we go that way, may be a modification of the system overall to accommodate temperature, to accommodate sample size. If we make our selection of fish at that entrance, if we do an underwater gate type selection, modifying the lower end of that, so we have a trigger gate and can dump the run back right back into the ladder at that point, and only have our fish that we want to sample going up the rest of the legs into the pool, all of a sudden we're only impacting those fish that they're getting their hands on. So maybe our temperature concerns go away because we're not subjecting, you know, 90% of the fish that go in there are not being sampled anywhere. I mean, that's kind of the plan.
Exactly.
So if we can reconfigure that, we can make our choice, instead of down the flume, instead of making down the flume, we do it underwater, we sample and do that.
You've got the roundabout issue. You've got that where you come in, it could go around the corner,
exactly.
And go back in the upper ladder.
Exactly. I think we're taking advantage of that. Yeah. And then once we get up into the pool, and then you could be up in the pool, it gives us a lot more room because we no longer need that visual observation up there. We could redesign that deck up in there for a larger holding capacity or a crowder in the main pool or something along those lines, because we'd only be affecting the fish that we have directed as our sample.
Which is a smaller sample.
So
you take what you need and crowd up.
Tens of fish.
Yeah.
And you can do that, almost all day, with the next day. Once you get up into the crowd pool, you just crowd out that pool, a day's worth of fish that are accumulated up there.
That gets rid of a lot of problems I have in the trap.
That's my concern, is the impact on so many fish out there that we don't need the information from.
It becomes more selective.
So we can redesign that and select, and then it frees up the area up there. We have a lot of area up there that's taking up the flumes.
Yeah.
You know, because of the visual observation. If we can get rid of that, then we have rooms for
tanks,
recovery tanks and bigger oscillators. We have head to put fish in a better location, not dump them into the into that rail that, you know, that's
high velocity rail.
Yeah. So, yeah, but that's all. That's, you know, that is a 3 years out.
5 million
or 4 years out.
It's actually I remember when we were first designed, when we put that count window in, there was some thoughts about how to efficiently get me back to the ladder. That was the part of our
that was the part, because we have the roundhouse.
Actually. So it still have an issue above 72 degrees though.
For this year.
And what I've heard pretty clear is a need not to sample. I guess that's going to remain a criteria about that 72 degrees based on better information. Yeah, right? From the creative check. So, I think the point is on years where we expect, I mean, I think there's indications based on model that we need a different method in those years where things are hot. So, I think, you know, one thing you guys really should consider in the harvest management is option two in those years when things are going to be warm. When you're going to lose a large portion of your steel in that time frame, and I know these steel are critical for assessment, then we should consider an alternative method to solve the training.
The one thing I think that goes across the board, not just for 72 and above, for the whole system. I'm still looking for some willingness, that I'm hearing here, but you know, it is on paper to develop a plan to move forward beyond intensive sampling. And that takes the 72 out of the picture as well as the 70, and maybe even some of the other sampling. But it's still hands-on intensive efforts. I'd like to see if it's the harvest folks or whatever, maybe it's a collective thing. Rob says everybody really needs to be working on these things to come up with a vision of the future, not just status quo long term.
Yeah, well, I wasn't there yet.
Sorry.
That's okay. But I just wanted to throw that idea out. I think folks need to look at that. So back on one issue, and that is day-to-day sampling and alter this. Because with Rob, I can't get this group back together. I'll have the one would be tomorrow. But, I think the key is we need probably 3 or 4 key folks from this group that need to talk, and which I think you guys already do, but it's obvious that no one needs to be in that loop. I think you need to be in that loop. It sounds like you're one of the primary group sampling, and probably need one of our folks at least to be notified, aware of that. But I would hope that as we need to adjust, as we need to ensure if we do see a problem, we need to adjust the other way for a few days to make sure we're correcting that problem. We do not want to impact a large number of fish here and then have a problem with spawning grounds related to just a sampling facility. So, boy, I can't encourage enough that, you know, have that key. You guys need to exchange numbers. I'm sure you probably already do, but I guess I would provide like Ben or Tammy, or maybe that's Bernie, talking with you folks as these day-to-day issues come up. Let's resolve them if you can. Then elevate them and we'll all try to get on the phone or whatever. But boy, I would hope to sampling. Is that a reasonable request or is that already happening?
It happened earlier this year when Critfic was in contact with the project. I guess some of the concern is that these rules, you know, they're in the FPP and they're kind of blanket rules for working at our facilities, and they went through a lot of negotiation and a lot of discussion. They were thoughtfully crafted, and we certainly recognize the need to get the information and we appreciate that need. But if this was University of Idaho or NOAA Fisheries coming in to do some of their research projects, we wouldn't have any problem telling them, I'm sorry, you know, it's warm water and this is what you have to deal with. So we wish you luck and we'll accommodate you as best we can.
So what you're saying is we have what this suggests is differing criteria for differing folks in the facility.
Yeah, and that's kind of something hard to, at least for me, when I think of the FPP criteria and that it should apply equally to everyone, trying to solve that little bit of discrepancy there. that we are treating different groups differently, and that can create a lot of confusion, because when they're in there, we do allow whatever other research is going on to piggyback on that time. So it could impact, you know, this year it's been pretty slow for research, but in previous years we've had four or five groups in there at the same time.
Well, that's why I wanted Dave early in the meeting. We jumped off on some other tangents here, but I know the Corps has very specific needs to meet BIOP requirements over the next 3 to 5 years. And I certainly want that embedded in our discussions. I mean, we see those as RPA requirements, so I'm hoping that this group that is working on these specific issues is aware of that and what those requirements are. Most of them are spring, I think.
Right.
So I realize I handle the issue, but
yeah, it's not a sense to remain in there.
Right. And I'm assuming it's Hawkeye that we're going to be
but the concept of revamping the facility for all sampling, I think, is a sound one, because you know, control the number of fish you're potentially impacting would be a good, benefit. The funding question would be a separate thing, but I would certainly volunteer some of Ed's time. Yeah, I'm taking back some of my 30%.
Yeah, I'm gonna volunteer. Do you know what you're saying about the millennium? And I'll volunteer, Dave.
I can sorry. There might go over here. Two or three groups of people that need to talk. One on just the same season management to get through the one more area and do the trap operation on a real-time basis. The other is this, the interim fix, which sounds pretty simple, but something that leads in parallel to flow. And then the third is the long-term arrangement. And maybe two and three are the same people, I don't know. But I'd like to get both of those efforts kind of on track and going. And I appreciate the request for clear guidance for the ENCs. And if there really can be coming out of this meeting about how they're going to work. I think it's easier to roll out of it. The easier it's going to be for field staff to, to work with, the situation we're trying to manage. So.
The one other thing that we touched on in the last FBOM meeting was a way to kind of measure the impact after they sample, and so we were going to look at run timing of. Once they handle a fish, it's back in the system, they can look at a bit tag and see the travel time between when it was handled and how long it takes to get through the adult system. So are we looking at, have we looked at any of the data since the last step policy? Yep.
They tend to do that in the final.
Okay. And I don't know if we want to do that, but the whole thing, we can start getting an idea of how long some of these handling issues, you know, when you handle a lot of fish, when it starts doing the run.
I have done some of the comparison. I know for sockeye, I think it's an average of like an hour, and sockeye and bluegill and the time they're upstream of how many do you know? Well, Chinook are less than that. It's more than the other dams,
right.
But it's not that much. I don't know how it compares though with how fish that. Well, sockeye very tank fish really, right. Very few, but compared to Chinook. You can make a comparison to Chinook.
It doesn't tell you much about long term. It's going to take longer. That's not it. I don't expect those fish to die in that stretch anyway.
One thing we can do, and I just talked with Chris Greer about this, is to look at, you can tell by pit tank readers, you can get a sample of those that went up the ladder that didn't go through the FF and other
right.
And start seeing for system escapement if there's any kind of difference.
Yeah.
And it's fairly straightforward. Mm-hmm. You can try to get make sure your sample's pretty equal in time.
Yeah.
But that's something that we'll have to do.
Yeah. Probably that is a good thing of the fish. fish, you run the snake like the river, that snake for sockeye, and all the sockeye fish tag on the snake river. So your survival to Ice Harbor or Oregon would be a lot more for your sockeye worker tag.
We can take a minimum sample size of 20, I think that would take care of it.
So many people are related to our catchery fish and tax fish.
Well, I think what he was suggesting is that you don't, he wasn't comparing to your tag fish.
No.
He was comparing to the other Red River fish that were going through the facility or not.
Or his tag.
Yeah, that's definitely already
tag. Yeah, so that would be a better
strategy. We'd probably be only do those that were handled probably in the FF and versus those that aren't. We could do a couple of them.
Actually, I tried to do this in the last couple of weeks, so I've seen if I could do that. There's so few fish that I have, and I'm trying to get it out
of some of the past years where they take a higher number of fish. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So back to something Gary mentioned earlier, or Rob just said about getting back on some of these issues. The interim fixes, in my mind, that's probably a Federwig role, or at least let's look at what they are and see if that fits in Federwig, and we'll figure out. So we'll figure out funding and depending on what we're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So you've got to identify some people for the in season area. So then the long term fixes is. Who's tracking that one? Where that goes? That's something we've, as far as CRFM and our program for implementing the buy-up, that's something I don't think we were necessarily interested in a complete rehaul of the facility. And the reason being is that our plans for looking at adult passive studies using that facility for our program are really declining. But not to say that it's not needed or. If something like that happens, we obviously have to be involved.
Is the Corps willing to help scope out a potential solution, and then we can try to figure out where the funding sources later? Because I mean, I'm thinking in my head, there's maybe some Madison Stevens implications in this too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the new goal that this has been hit with is to try to end overfishing. So.
Will you sign your name to that?
How about my lawyer?
He wasn't even here.
but I'd like to have people try to work on something. And once we, if we get to something that we think will work, then I think especially Cryptic is in probably a better position to go lobby than anybody else is. But we can certainly support it. Try to fish, extend our reach as best we can and leverage some money. I do understand the Corps' point that this is kind of a fishery and energy thing,
So what do you suggest looking at it? Are you suggesting looking at it or full design? I'm assuming you're really saying let's investigate it.
Not quite recon, what the scope of it.
Just so we come up with some concepts.
We've got some things thrown out here that sound interesting, and we can follow up with those. And I think that this interim lead issue is simple. That's just, that should be very easy, something we could do this winter, low expense. But, as simple as it can.
Yeah, I agree.
Then the next level could be who knows what. I mean, I've got some ideas. We need to get those kind of thought through, and it'd be good to have the people as well as the University of Iowa involved in that, and the people that use the track.
So we did that a couple of years ago, and we went through a big punch list of everything we thought we could do to the existing layout we had, and we did those things. And so if there's more, I think we'll see what they are.
That was Band-Aid approach. That was what we do with what we have. I'd like to step back and talk about a little larger scale.
So the difference is the concept is completely different. The concept is this is probably a mischievous word, but it's selecting the numbers of the types of numbers of fish to get the facility versus the entire run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a totally different concept.
Yeah, we didn't
like that. I think it's worthwhile to think about this. But, you know, I'm not trying to be evasive or anything. I'm just going to be right up front. We're project funded. And when we're project funded, if I see good cause, then I have problems in doing this. But when it's something totally outside of our mission, then I got to think how I'm going to work. I mean, you know that.
Yeah,
it's just the way we work. And I have to define to the manager saying, we're going to redesign this.
Does that have to be more funded? I mean, it's more property, obviously, but can there be a cost share?
Absolutely.
It just seems like
I just need to look at that. And, you know, if there is potential for other funding, I think our folks are probably the right guys to do the design.
Absolutely.
And work through fit over issues. It's just, it's difficult for me to sit here today and say, I can,
don't think
the
anybody's asking me that.
Yeah, I can understand that. So we'll work with
this. Is out there with him tricking you in the sun.
Yeah.
Ross Nate.
We certainly have a feel for where the solutions lie in terms of that making pick a label thing and the longer term crowd or holding tanks up, the sooner we can get to work on the funding strategy. Is that the funding strategy stuff has potentially longer lead times?
Right. Yeah. People
I suggest we, you know, I'd love to commit into this for Richie, but you know, I think coming up with concepts is five or six people working with hydraulic engineers and a couple of biologists and Ed to sit down and lay some concepts on the paper.
And Ed.
And Ed.
I see actually four things here. I see this year, I see next year, I see the long term for trap, I see the long term for harvest mesh, and getting away from tractors as much as possible. So, you know, there's four pieces. The second one, the third one, I think we have a strategy for. The first one is an arm wrestle exercise, and the last one, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to come together yet. That's a multi-discipline group that needs to think about how we can invest.
I don't have a clear idea, but I know we've done a lot of thinking. As Stuart said, we can do a lot, but the age data is something we've got to come up with some ideas on. It's probably TAC that needs to, some USU Oregon Technical Advisory Committee folks will need to assist on that. And then, you know, Jeff and his video, or the video as familiar with that technology.
So I guess I'm looking for somewhat of a commitment to get some group together and combine TAC and interested party.
Well, you put a piece of humorous coming out, you just be able to blow the scales out of the fish tank.
Yeah. I rest.
That's really kind of, it has sort of a steelhead focus, Gary. I mean, that's because that's where we're dealing with the big water temperature issue. Obviously, we've got a Fallchinook. It's not quite as severe as the August water temperature. August, early September is where we need kind of an immediate work environment as opposed to the spring Chinook, summer Chinook period.
Yeah, I think the steelhead one is easy. In my mind, I've already seen some pathways there. I'm not so sure about for the other stock management issues.
That's,
you have to have your hands on the fish to get a genetic sample, and that has to be here, not somewhere in a terminal fishery. Then how you accomplish
accomplish that without actually knowing the profession? How do we get past that? To what extent can we use that's what I want to get. Those kind of commitment for folks to work for it that longer term, getting away from that.
Well, we're scoping the genetics project right now, so it's a good time for us to think about those kind of design issues.
Looking at funding, looking at ideas, getting the plan together. And as far as this near term thing, like tomorrow, today, we need to sit down and talk about that. I just kind of feel like we have a gun already a little bit here.
We did what?
We kind of have a gun already.
Number
of pickup leads that sorry, but I just feel that way. It's like, well, okay, 4 days not good enough.
Better.
An hour with all 4 days not good enough. We want all.
The one hour may be good enough. I mean, but the problem is if we agree to 1 hour, we agree to a half an hour, and then if we're okay for 2 or 3 days, and then now it's not working okay for us. As soon as we say 1 hour, then next week all of a sudden the fish start going through around 9 o'clock instead of 8, you know, and then all of a sudden boom, we don't get fish because the leads are up and fish came through. I mean, it's a huge gamble out there. I mean, it is a lot like fishing. We're okay with the thing that it leads.
I mean, it just comes down to if we don't get this number of fish, whatever that tells me that number is, then we fail.
And it's
totally fail.
And it's a plus or minus thing, you know. And sometimes it's 1%, sometimes it's 1.5%, sometimes it's 0.5%. This week,
this is not enough. I understand.
And then trying out, well, let's try out 350s for a week or two. You know, the run can be over. I mean, or half the run can be gone.
What you guys think to give you an added push of fish without all of these being down in the entire matter for you?
Four feet at least the first hour, and then maybe the afternoon at least meet their crafts to drop for another 15 minutes or something. You know, something along those lines. I'm sure $1 eggs in that first hour basket.
So if I get, let's maybe break this down a little bit. So we're really talking about having four pick these down for 3 hours, if I understand. That's kind of where we're at. Because the between the third hour and the fourth hour, basically, that's just fish coming off the.
Yeah,
that
can work too. We almost.
That's no restriction. Gary, you suggested an hour.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, really reluctant an hour to try to do that other than three leads. You know, I really go three leads now, but you guys have kind of implied that just doesn't.
Yeah, the fish are around.
So the summer chinook just went.
And then there's the idea of watching what goes by and regulating that way. So I guess it comes down to what 1 hour, give you an hour. You know, 4 days a week, first hour, your leads are down. After that, you're back to two leads. Or you go out there and you watch the number of fish that go through.
With 4 leads down.
Yeah, 4 leads down.
Yeah, 4 leads down.
Watch, but that could take all 4 hours. It should.
You have 30 minutes each hour for the first 3 hours, 4 leads down.
Yeah, I know. That's a lot.
Thank you, Sam. We ran the sample over that time period that you're worried about.
I know.
How far is it to put the leads up? No, I honestly. And it's on power.
I don't know that a half hour is enough.
I'm fine with the house saying, okay, 1 hour.
Let's just try to see how it works.
I mean, if we can do an adaptive management sort of thing and say, hey, we're not getting the hour, or it's
so what do you guys know? The project is really important.
That's why.
The first hour is more easy for us to at least monitor. If it's down for an hour, And not that there's not trust, but, you know, we got to go out there and we have to be accountable for our facilities and what happens at them. So we need to be able to go out there and say, yeah, we know when those leads were down. And they're down from 6 to 7, and then we have one or two leads up after that, whichever is agreed to.
I mean, we did work these criteria out. I mean, it took, what we're modifying here is something that the leads put together. We're kind of almost unilaterally modifying that because a lot of folks weren't involved. That we're involved in developing those criteria here. They were done carefully, thoughtfully, for reasons. And it's tough to back away from that. So we're backing away quite a bit. Let's go with that.
So let's say that the 1 hour just isn't working. What do we do then? Do we have a conference call of four people? Do the project bios meet with our folks and make a field decision? And if so, what kind of criteria do we give them to work with? Or, you know, do we want to suck it up? Or?
Yeah, I think you guys are going to do pretty well with that hour. I'm having trouble with doing this because you just as well say go ahead and do what you want, because every step of the way is another chunk, and all of a sudden there you are to where we would have been.
I guess it'd be nice just to say you get your first hour for the rest of temperatures at this, while we have water temperatures at 70 to 72, and call it good. If it were like a few years ago when we had temperatures reaching 72 at this time, I mean, would we still be going, well, you know, can you give us another half a degree to get our fish? It just seems like we keep chipping away, like Gary said, at the protections that we established. And yeah, it does impact you guys in your sampling, and that really sucks. But at some point, you got to say, okay, that sucks, but here's the protocols for a reason.
And that puts pressure on doing.
It really sucks, but it's not us. We're talking about.
I know, but that's
U.S. obligation.
Right. So this gun is at my head. See, Rob, that's what I'm saying. Right. If that's the case, the gun's at our head. We don't have a choice. Then fine. I'm sorry, this is a fact.
The U.S. obligation too. So that's it. You know, the trick is to harmonize all of these obligations and make them work together.
That's
so it's not, I mean, we're all in this boat together.
I think that's what we're doing. I think giving up on it, giving the 4 days, I mean, that quadrupled the amount of time in this facility, but obviously not quadruple or nothing is still nothing. So we're going to that one hour of putting those leads down, that shunts a lot of fish. Maybe you miss it by a few, but are you going to miss it so bad?
No, this isn't an issue. What's less than half? I just worry we'll just use this.
And if it does miss it so bad that it isn't useful, then I guess we all have to jump off the edge of the bridge because we fail.
Well, didn't we have a weekly conference call between you guys and the project? If we're still not getting our sample, I mean, we'll have, if we go to this new operation, we'll know, because we set the calls to be done Wednesday. If by next Wednesday you guys are still not missing your sample with the 1 hour, four picking of leads.
Well, it still goes back to it goes back to the waiting week. You know, so like,
well,
if we don't get sockeye samples, so sockeye come through in 5 weeks, and so by the time you get it figured out, the gross down.
Well, what I'm saying is,
the next 3 weeks, the 50% of the steel is going to go through.
I know, I'm just saying my point is, by this next Wednesday we'll know if this operation had any impact. If it doesn't do anything, at that point, we can notify the Corps and say, hey, we think we need to go to a more aggressive pick and leave operation in that. Just to keep, because otherwise we're going to try to call back more.
So we would have a specific check-in Wednesday next week.
Well, that was the normal time to email.
The one-hour operation is working. And that check-in would be at the, it's not suggesting at home, but it's quite the priority that it is. That to me sounds, we'll have a sense of whether this 1 hour criteria is working and a place to come back to address it with real information as opposed to guessing. And hopefully it's not a problem and it all works and it's no big deal and if you're right.
How do we define what's working?
Just
Just one other thing. What's our criteria on current mortality in a facility when we're between 70 and 72? For direct mortality.
For what? Mortality?
Yeah, so if we all of a sudden start seeing mortality.
There's state limitations.
And so what would concern us? My question is if now with this, we all of a sudden see some moribund and or worse, what's our reaction to this? Because that's when things do get critical and we need a decision quickly.
Well, we do have specific take limitations in our permit. So, and we have to report all morts to NIMS. I'm not sure if it's real time, but we have reported.
It is real time. Well, what we've been saying is, as soon as possible, and certainly later than 24 hours.
Well, that's all more than the endangered species, which used to be an issue.
That's a good point.
What's the more? We're actually
our question is different.
Our permit actually
we have a different obligation.
Our permit actually allows mortality. We had all the takes. It's 17 fish. It's the total. But we've never. Well, last year was an exception. We had a bad stretch, which we had four or five sockeye die in a week. Mm-hmm. Although a couple of them, one of them was definitely well, didn't come out of anesthetic. The other three. Who knows what happened?
This year
we had a couple. So that's about the norm. Normally we have a few thousand, usually sample 2,000 to 3,000 fish. We may have 2 to 4 die.
So it's not in my year. My point is different. My point is while we're what I would consider to be a riskier situation, and what I want is the eyes and ears out there to say, if now these fish are becoming stressed, which you can tell when these fish are not doing well, and or they become worse, I want to be able to shut this facility down for that day or for a couple of days to make sure we're not approaching what I consider to be a problem.
We did the same problem last year. We were sampling high temperatures.
Yeah, I've always pointed out. I've always put my trust in. Project biologists that if they see anything, absolutely anything that's going to endanger fish or they don't feel that they, at least they have my full support to shut down and we'll deal with the consequences afterwards.
And it's in the FPP.
Yeah.
So we do have, we have
it's
that.
It's their call, it's their responsibility, it's their facility.
But at the same time, they're out there 24 hours
a day. Right.
We've had our crew come home early on a 67 degree day before.
I know you guys are.
Whatever reason, the oxygen levels are low or whatever, something is happening with the fish and they shut down and come home. And so we constantly monitor fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
we've got this criteria set for the shorter term well enough for area.
Question, I'm not sure it's been addressed. Is what temperatures are declining? If we resume sampling, the temperatures hit 70. It's in that time period, 70 at 69.5, all a lot of poultry look fast. If things are going real well, just 1 hour, 4 hour a day sampling, and 1 hour down, and we're doing okay, then maybe we can get by without it. If we're not, we have something a little more, and it doesn't make any sense to me as to why the limit is different on the upstream and the upward. Downward.
Well, let me tell you why.
Well,
it's for a very good reason that we have that there. We need to make sure that we're on a downward trend before we start impacting fish. If it's just at 69.9, there's enough error in temperature probes that that's pretty close to 70.
I would agree right now, 69.9. If we were getting some fish, we weren't getting any fish since I called earlier this week, because we're only getting 3 fish at each. I was wondering if it's below 70, we could go back to something more normal so we could get some fish. But otherwise, I wouldn't worry about it right now. I'm worried about it about 2 weeks from now. When if we start getting down lower, and then at another time, the temperatures typically cool. Right now, who knows what we're going to
have. 2 weeks from now, that would be a lot of fish. I mean, it's kind of creepy. I mean, it's all these criteria.
I'm not really willing to budge on that 69.5 unless I'm forced to, because that was a hard-fought battle that was very bloody.
These criteria have been developed over a lot of hard work in the last years, and now we're kind of loose sailing.
And
So what it comes down to is the gun in our head, we can't do, we have no say.
Really, more sense to stop at 6 man and on the way up, don't you know what's going up?
We can do that.
Don't help us anymore, Jeff.
We suck.
No, we just don't want to change everything. I mean, all these, otherwise, what's the point of putting rules down?
Let's see how this goes. So somebody's going to, what's the lawyer's name? So there's going to be a report out next Wednesday at, what meeting is that?
It's not, we just, we set up at the beginning of the season at a kind of a weekly check-in call with our the samplers and the project to report problems, see how things are going, if we need to make changes. And since if we instigate this tomorrow, that gives us Friday, and then you guys are set up on Saturdays, aren't you?
Actually, we're out there 4 days this week, so we'll start Monday through Thursday next week.
Damn. Did you want to start on a Sunday or a Saturday this week? Actually, I wouldn't, because it's going to be super hot.
Yeah, I know it's funny.
Yeah, I know it's I was going to say, because if you're just a couple days under our belt, I guess you'll have Monday, Tuesday.
Monday, Tuesday.
We can make it an afternoon call so you get Wednesday in as well.
Yeah.
And then do it at 1 o'clock.
We'll see.
So Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, we have
Wednesday?
A special.
Sure. Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock to see if this one particular thing has worked. If it hasn't worked, then we'll talk on the phone for another couple hours and then elevate it. I think it's my fifth meeting on this season.
I will
so far,
get
so.
A conference line and send that out to everyone.
Yeah, I'll be mute anyway. Yeah. Done. That'll be 71.5. What does that mean? Oh, we can't because there's door shut. That was the call. That's why I stepped on the roof. I don't know how to see how that call is going. Door shut.
I wouldn't mind having some ideas before that, so we can have something to talk about.
Okay.
We can get together. Are we going to go over there after this meeting, or?
The design stuff goes to the next bit of rig that you're asking for some preliminary thoughts before that.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind the site visit beforehand. Let's just get see what your ideas are. Start with that.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to, this year's in water work window, it seems to me we kind of got to jump on that.
Yeah.
Well, as far as for next year, I see that as
that's the leads issue.
Yes. An easy thing to do, no problem. But the further reaching thing is more just the ideas. Yeah. And that's something here I thought was great. So we'll start putting those on paper and talking about it. But there's the cost, there's the funding, and all these things.
Yes. So I guess, are we going to take a look at the AFF or not? Or just play? I don't know. I was asking because that was on the agenda. I don't know if people were still wanting to go and do it or not.
I'm going there right now. So.
Does it bother them?
I'm running out of time.
You're our fearless leader,
I think you answered all my questions. I was just questioning Rob about our addresses. I want to know to make sure everybody knows where we're going for the first two or three issues.
Yeah, we got where we had like the school issues, and I just don't have any less about the.
No leading list. I mean, I. Okay. So are people? Are some people wanting to go over to the facility?
Somebody has to fight their way through the spiders.
I'm just saying, if anyone does go look at it, it's not the spiders I'm worried about. I just don't think you're going to see anything on the other side because it's going to be this brown haze on the inside of the glass. This thing has been clean in how long?
Give me a broom and you get down.
You're in Vancouver?
Yeah.
that little cat window on the AFF?
You could fit cats. Right after they shut the lab down. Because you can't do it when there's flow at it. Not with the full flow of trappings. It'd be tough.